Jazz that tries to capture the essence of the African-American experience. Again, that's The Wiz, showing Monday, February 4th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
The time is 5:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Next up is Hedda with Preference.
Hi, dear listeners. Welcome to Preference. We'll be with you for the next hour. I am your host, Hedda. Very glad to be here. We have Sonia in the booth making this possible. So thank you to Somia. I want to thank all the listeners, all the folks who participate in the KBO community, who volunteer, who listen, who contribute. All of you folks make this radio station, this community radio station, possible. So thank you for that. This is the Queer Boost slot. Queer programming every Tuesday at 6. Next week will be Trans Positive with Emma and the rest of the Trans Positive Collective. And the week after that, Preference will be back. So we're excited about that. There's so much going on in the community. I'll try to update you on some things that that are coming up at towards the end of the hour. I want to remind folks that the state's attorney general has been doing surveys and community meetings about hate crimes in the community, and actually throughout the state, these conversations have been happening. So keep your eyes out and see if we can get some information about what the attorney general's office learned and what might come of that. So. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that, too. In the studio, I've got Hava and Danny Denenberg. I'm very excited to have each of you here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
We're delighted to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Do you each want to, I guess, give a little introduction? Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Absolutely. So I'm Danny, and I've been in the Pacific Northwest for about 10 years now, and... you know, at heart, I'm an artist and a teacher and getting training as a Chinese medical professional. And really, the inspiration for this book happened quite some time ago. And my sister's going to highlight some of the inspirations behind the book. But I would say at heart, really, I'm a storyteller. And that's a huge reason why I wrote this book. And really feel like the power of word and the power of story has, as cliche as it sounds, the ability to really affect ripple changes in communities and create larger conversations. So that's me in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Danny. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, well, my profession is social work and therapy, and I will soon be entering into a job that is my absolute passion, where I will be basically doing ecotherapy and animal-assisted therapy out in nature, and I'm really, really excited about that. I can say, I guess this is one of the first times I copied Danny in moving to the Pacific Northwest, about 7 years ago, I think, and, absolutely love it. Absolutely love being out in nature and, taking photographs, not as a professional, but that's another passion of mine. So, and I would say in any way that I can, really speaking on behalf of those without a voice, I think work with and on behalf of animals is a really significant part of my life.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So you're twins. Is that right?
That is a true story. Can you tell? Yeah, we're 13 and a half minutes apart. There's a debate between our parents. 13, one said 13, one said 14. We were not expected to be twins. We were expected to be a big boy. And they already had the name picked out as David. Mm-hmm. That's where the first two letters of my name came from. And so we were a pleasant surprise as spoon babies. We had one heartbeat, so only because back then they were only using ultrasound for incredible medical challenges. So we had one heartbeat come up, which is kind of astounding and really telling, I think, in some ways of our closeness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing, that your hearts were beating in sync.
In sync so much that the doctors were confused, I guess, and thought we were one big boy.
It sounds made up.
It does sound made up, but interestingly enough, in several of the twin interviews that we did, they had a similar experience where a lot of the babies born in the 70s and 80s. You know, didn't have ultrasound used for anything other than serious situations. So I would say 3 to 4 sets. We were constantly surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty. We thought we were unique.
Yeah, only to find out there's many spoon babies in the world.
So you've written this fabulous book, Mirrors and Closets. Tell us sort of what it is, and then let's talk about why it exists.
Sure. What it is. Wow. Well, what it is morphed into 18 interviews with different sets of twins, and really out of a place of conversation, and we'll get to that, but conversation around nature and nurture and the impact on sexual orientation and different twins' perspectives on that. There's so much more, but that's sort of a nutshell of what it is.
We were really, in many ways, hoping, this is a little bit of the inspiration, I think, in some ways, but we were hoping that the book would fill a niche, because we feel like there's so much knowledge and information out there around LGBTQ issues, and the same goes for twins, but that there's not a whole lot that bridges those two worlds. So we felt like just maybe this book could actually be unique in that sense. It could fill a niche, and we think it does. We hope we haven't replicated some phenomenal work elsewhere. It was a very humbling journey. It took us 5 years, and we talk about this in the foreword. There was definitely, you know, quite a bit of testing of our personalities, maybe is a good way to describe that. So we had to really work through some growing pains in this book, working with each other, and two very, very different approaches to writing and deadlines. And now we can smile. But at the time, it was quite the growth for us. Yeah.
It brought out the best and worst in us. I think that's fair to say.
I totally concur with that statement.
Well, I think there's a sense in which this book is something with one heartbeat.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from two different people. Two different.
Yeah.
And I think at some point we realized, and Hava will talk a little bit about this phone conversation that we had around the seeds of the idea for this book. But at some point, I think in that conversation, we talked about the power of telling other twins' stories, because we felt like it's not quite enough to just share our stories. We really want to dig into, is this the experience for other twins, that they're both United heard statistics kind of randomly thrown out around the likelihood that if one twin is somewhere on the LGBTQ spectrum, that the other twin is likelier, that the percentage is quite high. And this was all kind of anecdotal, and we really wanted to kind of test these ideas out and do our own research. Not to say that this book is an epitome of research, because there's really a small segment where we talk about epigenetics, and really it was the several sets of twins who I think elucidated these concepts more than we could get anywhere near close to. So it's really, it is one heartbeat, and then it's also, I guess, 36 heartbeats total. Mm-hmm. In a way, as cheesy as that sounds.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find twins to interview?
That took a tremendous amount of work. Many of the sets of twins Danny discovered through her soccer community, and then some of the twins introduced us to other sets of twins. And then other people were introduced to us through just random networking, where we just put out announcements, you know, does anyone know sets of twins where at least one identifies as LGBTQ? And just networking, we put up business cards and announcements on bulletin boards around Portland, just very old school
Yeah, we had one flyer at Portland Community College that in the potty press. So right in a bathroom stall, someone, at least one set, found out about us that way.
Going to the bathroom, they found out about our book project.
And a tea house, and then other sets. And then we actually drew a map at the beginning of this book that shows how all these twins and people are connected to one another. So it's pretty fun little visual. But yeah, I think we were both and are still surprised by how many twins were local. Really, there are exceptions to that. We have some twins in Canada. We have twins kind of, we have one twin in Georgia and then a couple in Northern California, Southern California. But yeah, the massive majority of them are here.
And I think that our intention from the beginning was to really get a variety of voices to be part of the project. And beautifully enough, that happened very organically, that we were able to interview twins who were from various age brackets, various ethnic and racial backgrounds, various ways that people identify in terms of their sexual orientation. We interviewed one set of twins who had a twin actually pass away of AIDS. We had another set, a twin who never actually met her twin. And so that happened very organically, that we were able to get voices to be a part of this project that were extremely diverse. We're very happy about that.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to talk with twins who are going to call in just a few. But along the way, I'd love to hear a little bit about your process of working together and making this book happen.
Yeah, gosh, I've joked before that if I down the road someone interviewed me and said, you know, name a project that you've kind of grappled with every skill set that you can imagine. This project was enormous. I don't know if we realized what a huge undertaking this was when we dove into this. I think we thought this will be our first book, and this is an exciting new thing, and we also don't know what we're doing. It's our first book. Both of us had written in the past. I had written for a magazine and done some columns and those types of things, but pretty small scale writing. And I think Hava would probably agree, same thing. So we had a lot of inspirations as authors that we know, but not a whole lot of writing experience. Although I feel like that's really one of the ways that I thrive is in written word. And we worked, we did hours and hours of transcribing interviews. So we'd interview a set of twins and then we'd have 3-4 hours of transcribing to really make sure that we accurately represented their stories and their truths. And
we even sent the chapters to the twins because we wanted to make sure that their voices felt authentic to them. So that added an extra layer.
Yeah, we went through, I think, 3 rounds of editing. We found a phenomenal editor, yet again through someone that Hava knows.
An ex-girlfriend.
Yep. And I would say it was at times it was a cumbersome process. It was hair pulling, infuriating at times, trying to find the time to fit into our schedules to do this. There were so many things outside of our skill set, from creating a website to promote the book to the printing of the book itself. That in within itself was such a fun process. I think once we actually knew the basics of that, but trying to figure out who works with who, the printers and the graphic designers and it was incredibly overwhelming, I think, to both of us. But we just took it one step at a time, and we Hava is a really good delegator. We call her the what's your nickname?
Taskmaster,
something like that, or the queen bee or something.
Queen bee,
yeah, the queen bee. The queen bee. Whereas I'm definitely like the worker bee underneath her little rule. It was definitely, I tend to be more free spirited and perhaps, just a little slower in terms of the way I let things marinate. And Hava's like, let's get this done. This is what needs to happen. This is like the end goal. These are the steps that need to happen to get there. And I really, it may sound like I'm painting this like draconian image of her, but really I admire her skill and feel like it was absolutely necessary to make this book happen. Without that, I don't know. I mean, I think the alchemy of both of those styles, it was vital to this book, but without Hava, I don't know.
Oh, thank you.
Shucks.
Here's a question that I've always sort of wondered this, maybe not articulated it before. Do you think that compared to folks who aren't twins, that having one another to compare your own personalities, your own sort of frame of mind, and do you think it's easier compared to non-twins to see yourself, because you have someone else so close to you who is different, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it wasn't until I started dating and making my own friends that I realized how it is to move through the world as someone who does not have their experience constantly validated by another person. And it was subconscious, that realization that you move through the world that way because that's all that you know. It's literally all that you know. And so to enter into a relationship with someone, or to, even make friends with someone outside of that, really reflects back to you it's the word I'm looking for, not enmeshed, but
that's a good word.
how closed off that experience is, that it doesn't, it only mirrors a very small part of your reality. So that's sort of a daunting realization, I would say.
Like sheltered in a way?
Not quite the word, but daunting, I would say. Oh my goodness, like this has been my reality for this many years, and this is not what other people think. Other people do not think this way. Other people do not act in this way. They don't make these same trains of thoughts. And that was fascinating and daunting to have that realization.
It sounds like we have Mitch and Zach on the line.
All right.
Is that right?
Mitch is here.
Hi, Mitch.
I think I'm here.
That's both of you?
Yes.
Wonderful. I couldn't quite hear that.
Hi, guys.
Uh-oh. Hey.
Yeah, do you want to introduce yourself, each of yourselves? Mitch, why don't you go ahead at first.
Sure. Mitch Seaman, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh.
Currently living in San Diego. I'm a Taurus. At 5'10", not sure what you guys want to know.
Well, we'll get a little more specific to twin experiences in just a moment. Zach, welcome.
Zach Seaman, younger twin of Mitch. I like long walks on the beach.
Which, any beach in particular?
A warm one, because I'm currently in Minnesota. It's like negative 50 here.
Are you able to leave the house? I know people.
I could. I won't.
What about that?
There are a lot of things I could do. Yeah.
So let's talk about how you. Let's start with how you came to be part of this book, Mirrors and Closets.
We had a mutual friend of the twins that had reached out to us and asked us if we would be interested, and we both supported the project and wanted to see more what it was about. So we said, yeah.
Before I before we continue, I want to it slipped to my mind that we should talk about the book launch. So what's the how about Danny? What's the good news there? You'll be at the Q Center next week?
This week. 2 days. Uh-huh. Right? So 48 hours. So it's going to go from 7 to 9. And we had a semi-formal thank you to all the participants in our book back at the Wildwood Farm Sanctuary back in September when the book got published. But we really wanted a community-oriented launching that really invited the whole community into the book. And so we thought, what better place to do that than the Q Center? I had done some fundraising work back as an AmeriCorps person years ago, and it just always held a special place in my heart. So I thought, why not return there? And yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a panel of the twins in our book. So some Q&A and some readings and some yummy food and wine.
We'll have the photographer there who will share his experience about what it was like to photograph twins and what intrigued him about the project too. So that'll be great to have his voice. Yeah, and then anyone from the audience can ask us questions about the book. Mm-hmm. So there's that opportunity.
So that's Thursday.
That's Thursday. We've got a Facebook page dedicated to it. So I think if anybody looked up LGBTQ twins
and light into darkness, light in darkness.
Yeah, I think that would probably bring them right directly to that event page.
Okay. 7 o'clock.
Wonderful. That's Q Center, 7 o'clock on North Mississippi. Yeah. So we'll see you there. Mitch and Zach, what made it important for each of you to participate in this project, this making of the book Mirrors and Closets?
Go ahead, Mitch.
Selfishly, I wanted to learn. Growing up, I always knew Zach and I were different. It didn't hit me until probably puberty that how we were different. And I've always kind of wondered. I mean, my brother and I are literally, we're identical twins. And so, like I said, my intents were partly selfish and partly selfless. Selfless in that I'd love to educate and, you know, share my experience because I do think it's kind of a fascinating one. And selflessly because I wanted to learn from the book, from the authors, from interacting with other twins. And I did substantially. So I'm really, really grateful we were selected for this project.
Can you elaborate on what it is that you learned by participating?
Well, that I wasn't alone, that there are other groups of twins that are in the similar situation. It had nothing to do with where I was raised, how I was raised. There was no ethnic connotations, no socioeconomic status, had nothing to do with any of that. Nature versus nurture. I guess maybe gaining some comfort in knowing that there are other twins out there in similar situations. I mean, I've been out of the closet for quite some time, so I'm very, very comfortable with it now. But kind of validated some feelings I had, I guess, younger feelings I had, if that makes any sense. I don't know. It doesn't make sense as it's coming out of my mouth, but hopefully.
It makes sense.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. And Zach, what about you? What was important about participating in this for you?
I wanted to support my brother. I wanted to support this movement, this book. I think I'm a teacher, so I think education is always a good thing. And I think this book is going to educate some people on maybe what they're going through, maybe give them some strength, empower them to speak up, come out, or talk about it more. And, you know, like I said earlier, to support my brother.
And how did you find that? How have you found this? What's your personal experience of participating? Sort of how has it changed you? What have you learned?
It's not so much changed me, but like I said, if it helps one person, come to terms with what they're going through, mm-hmm. or helps a parent maybe understand what their child is going through, then I think that this book's done its job. At least that's my view on it. The authors may be shaking their head in disgust right now because that's not what they wanted to have happen.
No, we were shaking our heads in agreement.
as a teacher and a coach, I want to positively influence my students and my athletes' lives. And if I can reach one a year, obviously I do more than that. But if this helps one person come to terms with what they're going through, because I know that it wasn't an easy thing that my brother did for him. I mean, looking back at it now and as far as how much he's grown and come to terms with everything, it's almost comical in a sense. It's comical in a sense that, for me at least, being heterosexual, that it's still an issue. That it's still an issue that people actually are against it and care that much that this stigma that being gay or lesbian or however you identify yourself is a negative thing. It's irritating to me. And I don't know, truth be told, that I would have this view if my brother wasn't gay and hadn't come out. But through the process of helping with this book and seeing my brother's victories over the last X amount of years, it's changed my view.
There's a fair amount in the chapter that reflects the interviews that you and your brother did, that talks about how your family responded to what each of you were bringing to them. There's not really a specific question there, but if you'd like to speak to that.
I was waiting for the question. Or an inflection voice.
But I invite you, each of you, to speak to that if you like.
Well, you know, as Zachary was speaking earlier, I was just a moment ago, I was thinking to myself about the feelings of shame that I had growing up gay and not really being able to identify with it and share it openly, and equally as a recovering addict for my brother. The feelings of shame and the self-loathing and disgust that we feel with ourselves and the narratives that we paint in our heads, right? I mean, if you think about it, the narratives, and I'm not sure if I'm alone on this, but I wasn't kind to myself growing up. I wasn't supportive, I wasn't a good cheerleader or advocate for myself, and I think it's because I was had an internal struggle. And I'm not going to speak for my brother, but I would imagine probably a parallel there for him as well. Not a sexuality demon, but maybe other types of demons that he had to internalize as well. And I don't know, Zach, if you wanted, I hate to put you on the spot, but that's kind of what my mind was going when you were talking earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, looking back at what I did when I was growing up, I mean, I didn't get into drugs or alcohol until I was 19. I mean, I was an All-American in track, I was the ASU president, I was all these things that society wants, you know, wanted me to be, or I thought. And then I got out of high school, and I coming to age, I guess, I became my real self, which was the addict. And I started using. And there wasn't any shame or bad feelings because I didn't know that there was any other different way. I was so clogged up with emotions and stuffing things down and self-medicating myself until I actually got clean and realized that there was a different way of life. Then the shame kind of came through. Like when I first got out of treatment, if you were willing to make eye contact with me, I was willing to preach to you about Narcotics Anonymous and how bad drugs and alcohol were. And then there was, I went through a phase of shame. Like I have to go to meetings and I'm a recovering drug addict, and a lot of society only hears drug addict when they hear recovering drug addict. And then I came to this place that I've been for the last, I don't know, 7.5, 8 years, that, you know, if you need help, there's help available. I'm not going to preach to you because we're all going through our same different things. You know, it's not your battle. It's I have my own battle, you know, and staying clean is not a problem for me. The drugs were not the problem. It's the obsessive compulsive thought process that got me into trouble. And it's my addiction has translated to other things. It was, you know, first it was girls, then it was the gym, now it's shoes, you know.
Any brand in particular?
No. Right now I'm kind of going through an Adidas phase, but I think my brother turned me onto those, a specific shoe, so I blame him. Codependency at its finest.
We're talking with folks who have compiled and participated in Mirrors and Closets, The Complex Journey of LGBTQ Twins and their siblings. There's a book launch party, Q Center, this Thursday evening, 7 p.m., and it will not be as cold and frighteningly cold as it is in the upper Midwest. So we look forward to seeing you, seeing everyone. This is Preference. I'm your host, Hedda. Do you have any last thoughts on participating in this project or anything you'd like listeners to know? Mitch and Zach, or Mitch or Zach, depending.
Mitch, you want to speak?
Could you ask that question but use different words? I wasn't quite clear what you're asking. I'm sorry.
We just have a minute more to spend with you, you two on the phone. So I'm wondering if you have sort of last thoughts you want to share on being twins or participating in the project or what you hope to see happen from here in a conversation around twinship, a word I've possibly never used out loud before.
Is that even a word? Did we just make up a word?
I think we did. I like it. I'll allow it.
It's a neologism. I think it's in the book.
You know, I can say this. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a little bit about my brother. I learned a little bit about my community. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share my story. I'm hopeful that lots of people read it and buy the book and learn from it, and we can preach awareness and compassion. And thank you. I'm really, really, really grateful.
We were grateful to have you.
And to piggyback onto what Mitch says is, you know, hopefully someone reads this book or hears this show and realizes that they're not alone, whether it's dealing with coming out of the closet or having a sibling that is trying to come to terms with stepping out of that comfort zone and saying, hey, guess what, I'm gay, or guess what, I have a drug problem. I know this wasn't centered around drug problems, but this is kind of how I identified with the project for me, because it was something that I had gone through, and my brother walked with me through it from the dark times to where I'm at now. So awareness, compassion, and hopefully it helps somebody.
Yeah, I responded pretty strongly to the stories of each of you in reading your chapter in Mirrors and Closets, so thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I just wanted to add on to those last thoughts around the theme of authenticity. I think that's really what we're trying to accomplish with this book, is aligning our real true self with who we are in the world. And Hava and I did that in a way in terms of just the book and giving back to causes. Part of the proceeds from this Thursday will go to the Q Center, and the offsetting of the book, we're planting trees and all kinds of things that we just truly align our values around. So I think Mitch and Zach highlighted that beautifully, that theme of just being authentic to who you are and who and what you care about in the world.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about just that that offset, or sort of where this project and this book fits into community and our experience of it outside just this sort of the subject matter?
Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead, Hava. It looks like you're...
I was just going to say, I don't know where this drive comes from, whether it's Jewish guilt or or what. It's, you know, Tikkun Olam, which is a large part of Judaism, an emphasis on making the world better, making the world a better place. And we just felt like it was really important that the production and the waste that went into the book, not waste, but use of resources that went into the book, whether that was the printing of the book, the driving we did for the photography, you know, the travel that Twins did to interview with us. We felt like it was important to acknowledge that and be responsible for that and offset that. And we thought we would do that in a creative way and giving back to the community by planting trees with Friends of Trees, which is a local organization, and more specifically to their native plants program. So we just donated to them. We just got a thank you letter in the mail from them that was really sweet. And we feel happy that we've done that.
And then 1% of the proceeds of the book sales go to different organizations, and we rotate those. We're still deciding on how often we're going to rotate those, but this time around, the proceeds have been given to 350.org, which addresses climate change around the world in really unique ways. We gave to
the Trevor Project that addresses suicide within the LGBTQ youth community specifically. And we gave to the Orangutan Project.
Oh, yeah, Orangutan Foundation International. It's fighting the palm oil crisis. So even that 1%, we're hoping, does some good. And then we'll probably be selecting some local organizations, and so we can really, you know, actually physically see what's happening with these projects. And
honestly, yeah, we would much rather give more, way more of our proceeds to these causes. We just have to get ourselves out of the red first with all of the funds that went into the making of the book. So,
yeah, thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the book launch on Thursday is sign interpreted. Is that right?
It is. It's American Sign Language interpreted. Yeah,
Fingers Crossed, I believe, is the name of the organization. And they are giving interpretation pro bono, which is phenomenally generous. And so,
yeah, we want to give them a big shout out of appreciation for that. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
And are Twins joining?
Yes, we have a smattering of, we have one full set of Twins, we have a half set because the other twin lives in San Francisco, and then we have one twin who's participating who had his twin pass away from AIDS. And so those are the twins other than ourselves who will be participating. And then I think we have maybe one or two twins who will be at the event too. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. We have another set of twins on the line, Brett Walker and Bea Walker. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Good. It's nice to hear your voices.
Yeah.
Nice to hear your voice as well.
Thanks for calling in, joining the program. Brett, do you want to introduce yourself real quick to start with?
Hello, my name is Brett Walker. I am the second twin.
Thank you. And B?
Hi, I'm B Walker. I am the first twin. I was born first.
Great. Tell me, how did you become involved in the book project Mirrors and Closets?
This is Brett. So I worked at Aveda in Fashion Valley Mall in San Diego a couple years ago. And actually the twins, Hava and Danny, their mother, came in and she was just shopping around for some products. And, you know, at the end of every transaction, I guess, we offered wellness, and that consisted of like a hand treatment, which was kind of like a small little hand massage. So I offered her one of those, and we talked, got to know each other, and somehow we came upon the subject of her daughters and Dami and Hava, and she said that they were writing a book. And so I let her know that I was a twin as well, and that's, you know, how everything started.
Mama, the Maven connector.
Yeah, thanks for that. So how's the experience of participating in this project been for each of you?
This is B. The experience for me, especially like when we had to do the video messaging of or the video recording or the voice recording of the interview, that was very significant to me, just because throughout the whole time I got to learn more about my twin and about myself. So it just helped me and my twin open up to each other as far as like communication and just learning about each other, and then just learning about like how twins are with each other as well.
So this is such a broad question, but I think it's a starting place for us. What is your experience of each other as twins?
This is Brett, and honestly, it's very normal to have a twin, to have someone that looks just like me, like. You know, like, it's just, I don't know, that's the only thing I can really, besides that, like, the attention that we get is, like, it's so crazy.
And culture shock to see how many people, like, go crazy over finding out that me and my twin are a twin.
Yes, actually, I was at work today, and a lady came in, and she was purchasing for twins, and I was like, oh, I'm a twin, and I pulled out my phone and I showed her, and they were like, oh my god, you guys are like identical. So yeah, like that is an experience that we experience all the time
on the daily.
Yeah,
every single day.
Yeah, but it's normal, I guess. Yeah, at this point in life, I guess it's something normal that, you know, it's still shocking because you don't expect people to like freak out over finding out that you're a twin, but it's normal.
But it's a normal thing because it happens every single day.
We concur.
Well.
Yeah, we're here. Yeah, so, well, I was saying we concur, and I, interestingly enough, that, you know, it's become normal, even at 43 years of age, for people to typically ask, and I'm sure, B and Brett, you can relate to this, you know, if I pinch her, will you feel it? Do you play tricks on people? Do you experience telepathy? And it really wasn't until we were 29 years of age that we truly had our very first experience of not telepathy, but essentially Dani and I came out at the very same time, but with about 3,000 miles between us, which then connected to our desire to write this book in the first place. So I don't know if this would be a good time, but maybe Dani can read just a tiny bit.
Sure.
Do we have time?
Yeah, that would be great.
For that? And then we don't want to take away from B and Brett too much. I'll just read this little paragraph here. But this is perfect segue from what Hava was just sharing. So we write about this in the foreword called Late Bloomers, and it's just a segment from that. I'm not sure we realized just how significant that phone conversation was until we had a chance to reflect upon it years later. Essentially, Danny and I indirectly came out to each other at the same exact time and with 3,025 miles between us. To this day, we still find ourselves blown away by the complexities of nature and nurture and how intertwined these factors were in impacting our separate experiences. On opposite coasts, we each crossed paths with pivotal people, situations, and circumstances that drew out what we believe was inherently hardwired. We can't wait to share these stories with you.
We're here on Preference this evening until 7. Calculated Conversation comes up next. We're talking with the authors and participants, a couple of the participants in Mirrors and Closets, the complex journey of LGBTQ twins and their siblings. Brett MB, do you have other siblings besides one another?
Yes. So we have one younger sister, and she's also LGBT as well.
Interesting. How is that for you? Sort of what role do you think you take?
Well, as her older brother, I definitely, and being, this is a B, being the eldest twin and the oldest of all of the siblings, I do feel the responsibility of her older brother. She is my younger sister, and I will always protect her and see her that way. Even though she's like maybe 3 inches taller than me and my brother, she could probably protect me more than I could protect her. She's my little sister.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, do you have anything else you want to share?
As far as my little sister goes, I concur. I would do anything for her. She's definitely, I guess, her own person. She knows exactly what she wants. She does what she wants. But she's very loving and caring and will always stand up for you. She also has a section in our chapter as well. The twins got a little interview with her as well, so she has a little section in there.
Wonderful. Brett and B, thanks so much for joining us today.
No problem.
Yeah, I hope folks will either come out on Thursday and participate in the book launch or find another way to get a hold of the book. Hava and Danny, where will folks be able to get this in hand?
So there's a couple of stores in Portland right now. We have Broadway Books and we have Annie Bloom's where people can purchase a book. And then they can also go online. It's a long website, but stick with us. Grab a pencil. It's LGBTQTwinsAndSiblings.com. And again, that's LGBTQTwinsAndSiblings.com, or you could text us at 503-998-8936. Also, the book is at another read-through on Mississippi, so that's the third store that just took us on. And then in February, we're going to be doing another reading and event at the brand new book pub of Portland. So that's like Fremont and
13th, I think.
Yeah.
Between 12 and 13.
It's a great little space. Yeah. So February 28th, is that right? Yeah.
I like that space. I liked, my friends and I actually, we did a thriller dance
in the former space?
Yeah.
How the fun. Irish pub?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. For folks who don't know, I organize Thrill the World Portland We've done it 12 years. This will be the 13th year. You can come out. You can learn the Thriller dance, dress up as a zombie. That'll be in the fall. First 10 years, we did it a fundraiser for SMIRC. It's Portland Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, smyrc.org. They have a stable parent in New Avenues for Youth now. So we've done it as a fundraiser for KBOO the last couple of years. So when it gets closer to Halloween, start to think about becoming a zombie and coming out and dancing with us. We get a good crowd, between 150 and 200 zombie dancers. And it's my own personal, it's the longest relationship I've been in. though it's usually not romantic, so not a romantic relationship, but it's a passionate one. So that's Thriller World.
Anyway. It's where your heart is.
Yeah. So we're talking, we just have a couple of minutes left, I think 2 minutes. So I'm just giving me the two. So we're talking about the book launch of Mirrors and Closets, The Complex Journey of LGBTQ Twins and Their Siblings. The book launch party is this Thursday, 7 p.m. at Q Center on North Mississippi. Some reading, some twins participating.
Some vegan cultured cheeses from Cultivating Kindness. Cultured Kindness. That's the name of it, yeah. And some wine. And a Q&A panel where people can ask us questions about the book.
And the book itself is available at Annie Bloom's and Broadway Books. I want to thank my employers, actually. It's my last week there after 11 years. So I almost a thing for me. And the folks were nice enough to give me a gift certificate to Broadway Books.
Oh, cool.
So I get to hop down there. Okay, so we just have time for last thoughts from Hava and Danny. What are your last thoughts today? Thanks for... Before we run out of time, thank you for joining us this hour on Preference.
I think my last thought would be just my takeaway from the book, really my fascination with the impact of nature and nurture on sexual orientation and the unfolding of that process. And I think one of the biggest takeaways I experienced from the book was learning from other twins about this field of epigenetics, which is of my very rudimentary description would be like triggering of genes based on your experience in the environment, triggering something that is already sort of hardwired within oneself. And so interestingly enough, I think a number of twins we interviewed were essentially describing epigenetics, that was their perspective on sexual orientation and impact of nature and nurture on that process was related to epigenetics.
Sherry and Carrie and the Dolans, those two twins we want to credit with their incredible knowledge of epigenetics. I'd say, is there time for like 10 seconds?
10 seconds.
Okay, so I would say really a big part of this is contributing to a non-toxic culture. So yeah. Politically, there's just so much toxicity that really one of our aims of the book and this event on Thursday at the Q Center is to create safe, nurturing, connected space for people. And we hope that we're able to at least contribute to that.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. We'll be seeing you Thursday night.
Great.
This has been Preference Calculated Conversation coming up next.
Thank you.
Thank you. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Musicians in Mexico City is a night of experimental music hosted by Buenas Intenciones. The event features guitar improvisation and abstract versions of traditional American and Mexican songs. There will also be a talk by editors of Músicos en la Ciudad de México. Again, that's Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, February 4th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen The Wiz.